Hey, this is Megan Tandy, and welcome back to season four on Not Another Teen Wolf podcast.
Guess who's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Hello, this is episode 69 of Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. We just had a little bit of banter about the number of episodes that we're on and how it would have been nice to get to a nice clean number by, you know, the start of a new season instead of the, you know, number that we happen to be on. But anyway, we'll move away from that swiftly because it's season four time. We're here for season four finally, and the episode The Dark Moon, we're going to do a new recap of a new Teen Wolf episode, me and Karen. It's very exciting. Are you excited?
I'm very excited. I feel like the time between 3B and 4 was really short, but at the same time, like, super long.
It was very
I'm glad
short.
We're finally here.
It was very short, and it was very busy for us. We had BiteCon,
yeah,
and Indie PopCon, and we had our bite-sized episodes with Katie and with Danielle, and it was just really full on in a short period of time, and then very overwhelming. But
yeah, we're back. Hiatus is never really hiatus for us.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, when they're longer, it's a bit more dragged out. But this one was, the hiatus was one of the busiest times for us, this hiatus, because of so much news, as opposed to when it's rolling along the season airing. It's kind of, we have a regular idea of what's going on. But this hiatus was freaking full on for everyone. I'm like pinching the bridge of my nose. Oh, what a hard my life is. Yeah, so you may have heard, if you listened to this from the very beginning, seeing as you probably did, that we have a new intro this week from a brand new Teen Wolf star, Megan Tandy. You know, she's a Teen Wolf cast member from way back, or from last year at least, and as you all may or may not know, she's returning for quite a full-on role in season four, which is cool. And at the end of this episode, after we do our episode recap, you'll be able to hear a little bit of a surprise full-on interview with Megan about Brayden and about the filming of the season four premiere and everything like that. We were lucky enough to organized to speak with her, and we've got her on this episode in interview format, which should be really, 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 really cool. And we hope that you really, 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 really like it, because we're really, really, really proud of actually pulling it off behind everyone's backs. So, yeah. Are you excited about that, Karen?
I'm really, really, really excited.
Say really again.
You say really again.
Really, really, really excited. So we're going to do our episode recap, and then we're going to speak to Megan about, you know, her role so far in Teen Wolf, and how she's going to be a pretty, pretty major part of season four. And that's really cool that we got to have her on the premiere episode. So yay for that. Yay for her. We're very, very excited. But before we get to that, we've got to deal with the actual episode and all that normal stuff. So you'll have to be patient. As usual, if you want to chat to us about the show or about our episode or about anything you feel like, really, you can reach us on our Twitter, which is NATW Podcast. You can reach us on our email, which is natwpodcast@gmail.com, or our Tumblr, which is notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com. We recently hit a nice little milestone on Twitter of 5,000 followers and a rather large one on Tumblr, which was 50,000 followers. And today, I think while you're listening to it, we should have had the announcement for the winner of our giveaway celebrating all of the support that we've had from our followers. So whoever that is, I'm very happy for you, and I hope you enjoy your season 3B DVD and your tea and everything else that you get. The DVD has a pretty cool booklet in it with all different fan art, and some of our friends are in that, and that's cool. So it's very exciting.
I just got mine today, and that was like ripping it open. I couldn't wait to see the booklet. It's really awesome.
I want to see it. I want to see one. I'm going to have to order it to come here. Usually I don't get physical copies of a lot of DVDs because they take a long time to come out in Australia, but I'm going to have to order that one. Jumping straight in, back to the old routine, Karen. How does that feel?
Strange. It's been a while.
We've had a bit of a crazy time, I suppose.
What we're supposed to do.
Well, first of all, you're meant to pick your favourite quote from the episode. So, Karen, what was your favourite quote from The Dark Moon, episode one of season four?
My favourite quote was definitely when Malia said, "I would never leave without you," to Styles. And I'm really surprised that this ended up being my favourite one, because like I've said before, Malia... I was really neutral on her. I didn't hate her like I know a lot of people do. And I can understand why. Like, whatever, that's their opinion. I always felt really neutral towards her because I felt like we didn't really know enough about her. I didn't know what side she was on, what her objectives were. But she was really, really awesome in this episode. And not even that, but Styles' face when she says that, like... almost makes me want to cry. It was just perfect.
Yeah, he doesn't really seem to kind of have... I don't know if he knows what foot he's standing on with her, if you know what I mean. Like, he seems very taken aback by a lot of what she does, even though she's decided he's her favourite person in the world, whether that's in a boyfriend way or in a whatever it is they're doing way. He's her person, and... it's hilarious, you know, that she's just formed that attachment to him, and it's cute. It's mildly worrying because I don't know exactly what's going to go on, but it's just how matter of fact she is. She's like, "I would never leave without you." Mm-hmm. Them I would leave. Like, you know, it's just like, it was great. But her delivery is phenomenal. Like, regardless of where this is going to go, like, Shelley Henning as an actress, like, her delivery in these lines is so good that I'm really happy so far about Malia.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mine was a good old Steric classic, actually, surprisingly, because we haven't had much, you know, quippy fun from Styles in a long time, because Styles has been a miserable, possessed wreck. And, but basically when they're off going fetching Derek or trying to fetch him from the Calaveras, you know, he was kind of like, "Come on, you don't want him anyway. Haven't you noticed what a downer he is?" And then he goes on to extol how depressing it is to be around Derek and what a terrible conversationalist he is. And I just found it hilarious because we love to laugh at Derek. Sorry,
yes,
we do. And
did you see Lydia's face too? She was like, "Yeah."
And it's just like, yeah, I just love, I want to be a fly on the wall in a conversation with, like, Scott, Lydia, and Styles about Derek. Not about Derek's, like, mysterious past, but about Derek's personality. Like, because I just need it. Like, it would just be amazing, and I just love it. So I was happy to see that straight away, because seriously, why would someone want to keep Derek Hale as a pet? Like, I didn't even know what the Calaveras, I mean, they thought the Calaveras had him. Maybe they were just sent on the wrong track, but I can't imagine why the Calaveras would want him in the first place either. Like, he hasn't, you know, I don't know if it's just in a hunter thing or if they were totally misled and the Calaveras knew about Derek but weren't actually the ones to take him. But that's something that we will get to in the body of the episode, because it is the entire plot, basically. So now we'll go into our discussion of the actual episode, if Karen wants to go ahead with that, if she remembers how we do these things.
Sure, I will try my best.
New episodes of Teen Wolf, it's hard. Can't we just keep talking about the old episodes of Teen Wolf? Anyway.
No, we would probably... lose our jobs and get kicked off the podcast if we did that. So basically the episode starts out in Mexico with Lydia and Styles, and right from the get-go, this feels really different to me. Like, the tone, even the color of the episode, the cinematography,
I mean,
feels so new and different.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of that is that it's a full outdoor set in full sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
We also originally saw a screener which may have not been color graded, like finished, if you know what I mean. But the colors are really like highly saturated and really like, so we were talking last episode about them being really, the credits being really gold, if you know what I mean. The new intro
title sequence,
the credits. And this episode is all very gold as well.
Yeah. And I don't know, it was cool seeing Lydia and Styles right off the bat, you know, with their little banter back and forth. And, you know, she's like, oh, we're all going to die. And Styles is like, is that a banshee prediction or just a you being really worried type of thing? And it was good. I love those two together.
Yeah, I feel like Lydia's going to get sick of those jokes real fast, though. But yeah, I do as well. And I'm a little bit disappointed at the fandom. Sorry, fandom, but I am. There's a sect of fandom that's really against Lydia and Styles, whether it's as friends or just them being an item, whether it's as friends or a ship or whatever, because they think that it is an ongoing version of the whole, oh, he pressured her for years and she said no and now they're forced together or whatever, in terms of like his unwelcome attention. And I've never seen them like that. Like I think that Styles had a distant crush on her from afar, and but I don't think he ever really tried to pursue her. He was too scared. It was only once they started sort of getting to know each other through circumstance that they ever really even talked. You know, it wasn't a secret they had a crush on her, but I don't think it was the way that people have implied. And I don't like the negativity that surrounds the idea of Styles and Lydia at the moment. And I'd be happy with them as friends or as a couple, because I think that no matter how he felt about her originally, I don't think he ever treated her badly. And I, you know, think that however he feels about her now or however she feels about him, their relationship is, it's a do-over. Like, it's nothing to do with what he ever thought of her, you know, having a childish crush. It's completely not even a part of that anymore. And I think that they are really good together. And so I'm a little bit disappointed if people like, ugh, Styles and Lydia at this point.
Yeah. And I mean, it's fine not to like them. That's whatever. But I feel like it's degrading to Lydia, especially as a character, to think that she can't stand up on her own two feet and make her own decisions, and that she was pressured into
being
what?
Around him, or like, yeah having to deal with him.
That's not how it is at all. And I feel like she has organically grown as a person and has come to see Styles as a person and a friend. And, you know, we don't know exactly how she feels about Styles. Maybe there are some romantic tendencies in there, but I feel like whatever it is that they are now, they are friends, and it came about through circumstance, really, and I don't think it had to do with him always being around her.
Just see a bit of chatter about him, about the idea of it being that kind of typical male oppressing, threatening, pressuring presence, and I'm like, I don't think Lydia even noticed him. I don't think that he ever was that, because I don't think that he ever had enough of presence to her to even be noticeable. And I don't think that his behavior was anywhere near close to that what the idea of that kind of situation is to me. But I mean, you know, everyone sees things differently, but, you know, and maybe people have had bad experiences with that kind of thing. But I think that Lydia and Styles are a really fine and good dynamic, and I think that if they were to eventually be romantic, which I don't know if they will, it wouldn't be a, you know, oh, finally giving in to Styles' original advances. It would be a complete reset and a do-over of their entire relationship, because they know each other in a different way now, and that's kind of all it is to me. And it's sometimes a bit stressful to see people making it out like a really bad thing. But anyway, I didn't mean to get into negativity so quickly, but it's just something I've seen
Welcome
a lot.
Back.
It's just something I've seen a lot of in the hiatus, and I don't really agree with it, so oh well. Yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily have to ship it or anything, but I don't really get the negativity, like the real opposition. Like, I don't think it's like a creepy ship, if you know what I mean.
Right, yeah. And you know what? Regardless of that, they work so well together. And that's really apparent in this next scene when they go to the little rave slash club thing. And, you know, they think that the Calaveras have Derek and they try to buy them off. And I love the way that Styles just kind of puts the money out on the table. And Lydia's all like, you should probably take the deal. This is just better for everybody. And, you know, they just... I love that they were the ones that were sent in to negotiate with the leader of the Calaveras.
Yeah, I mean, straight up, though, the leader of the Calaveras is like, oh, where'd you get the money? Japanese mafia? I don't want your dirty money. And I was like, where did Styles and Lydia get $50,000 from the Japanese mafia from? Like, who's their Japanese? Do they have a... You know, did Katashi leave them a bunch of money or something? Is that like...
The briefcase. Remember the briefcase when Argent was going to sell the gun? That briefcase ended up in Argent's house. And I think that's where they had the leftover money from.
They just kept the money? Like, they didn't...
I don't know. Maybe that's how Argent and Isaac went to France.
Katashi bankrolled it. Thanks, Katashi.
From beyond the grave. Aww.
How sweet. What a legacy. I suppose. Anyway, I guess they have some spare funds to be throwing around. That's fun. So I suppose that's
yeah. My favorite part, though, like, this was seriously a highlight of the whole episode for me, was Malia, Kira, and Scott's introductions when Styles is just like, who said we came alone? And they just, the music kind of crescendos and they all sort of turn around, their eyes glow. Oh, it's so awesome.
Oh, Karen, it was slightly superhero movie cheesy.
But I didn't like I loved it.
I know, you're like, it was. I don't know, the it was cool and it was fun and a good, it was a good way of showing it, but I kind of laughed. I don't know. I was like, Malia's eyes are really bright. They don't look like the blue werewolf eyes. And I don't know if that's like a separate coyote thing or if it's meant to be like the werewolf that's, you know, killed someone thing.
I think it's the same because I'm pretty sure I saw somewhere that they've actually slightly changed that from season one, that they are brighter now. If you go back and look at Derek season one and then later on like season three and even with Peter and everything, they are brighter now. So I think that's actually the color of the werewolf eyes.
That's
too
fine. They're so freaking bright, but
they are, they look pretty cool though.
Yeah, so they're all there doing their little grooving. They're grooving and chilling out, and Kira and Malia doing some dancing together, which is interesting to me. I know that there was a bit of a like hoo-ha about this a couple of weeks ago, but I think either a leaked screen cap or a trailer showed it or something like that. And so they have that whole rave scene, because Jeff loves rave scenes. He's always got to have rave scenes, doesn't he?
I love it. I just say more rave scenes.
Okay, every episode a rave. yeah, but they have that whole, like, Malia being like, blend in. And so she kind of pulls in Kira and they do some sexy dancing and they both look pretty excited about that. So
yes. First of all, that was pretty amazing. I'm on board. It's pretty cool. But I have to say, Arden Cho dancing awkwardly as Kira was the best thing ever.
Yeah, poor Kira.
So good at it, though.
Yeah, she is. She's very, like, everything. I have so many headcanons about Kira that just from her little movements and actions that are just so good. And, yeah, I mean, look, this is going to be a theme of the season for me because I'm so, like, weirdly OCD. But, like, there's a lot of, you know, what does Malia know about? What doesn't she know about? Like, oh, she has to learn this. This is what we do in society. How does she know about being lesbians to blend in?
I don't know if that was her intent or if her intent was to just help Kira dance.
I know. I don't think it was either way. Like, I don't necessarily think that's what she thought. But, like, how does she know about modern sexy dancing and not about, you know, not killing people or whatever? Like, I don't know. Like,
I think I think, and this is probably what you're about to say too, because I know that we kind of just have to set some things aside and accept them, but there was 2 months between the end of season 3B and the beginning of season 4, so I kind of just, I want to think that Styles, Lydia, like all of them probably have been coaching her on some things, and maybe this is just one of those things that, you know, she's kind of picked up somewhere and she kind of knows of.
I think regardless, I think that this is going to drive us crazy otherwise. But I think, you know, if it's been 2 months and she was a coyote for 8 years or whatever, you know, lost in the woods, even if it was a real human lost in the woods for 8 years, we have to accept that in reality it would take a long, much longer time and a much more intensive situation for someone to be stable in society than this would. Like, it's not realistic, and we're gonna have to deal with that, if you know what I mean. And you know, but the way I sort of rationalized this whole thing was actually that she has the instincts to kind of look at her surroundings and just do what people are doing, if you know what I mean, even if it's not like, even if she doesn't actually know that much about humanity, that it's more like she just does what, you know, she knows how to literally blend in, be it like in a, as a coyote in the trees or as like a person kind of trying to make herself not stand out among what the other people are doing. And I can rationalize it like that. Like,
yeah, because I mean, Malia is not dumb. She's ignorant. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, like, she literally does not know things, but I think she's very quick. And she's going to be picking up a lot of this stuff quickly if she can get a grasp on it.
Well, regardless of what she meant, people are very keen on the whole Kira and Malia sexy dancing thing. And I know that there's a little bit of chatter about whether Malia, like her unsocialization, like her lack of socialization might mean that she is not really like having a defined sexuality, which might be interesting. Like that she like is that kind of, you know, it would be like an alien coming from outer space being like, what? You only have two genders and that's a thing, if you know what I mean? Like, or something like that, like that she'd be not really understanding of, or like Captain Jack Harkness, if you know what I mean, where he's from the 51st century and he's like, you have, like, rules about that? Why? Like, if you know what I mean? And I feel like that could possibly be a thing for Malia as well, which might be fun. But moving on from that, Scott's introduction was when he was talking on the phone to Styles the first time you hear him, which was the thing we were kind of screaming about in the last episode without saying. But basically, Styles and Lydia are sitting in the office and Scott just, you see him kind of knock out the security guard, pick up the walkie-talkie and you kind of don't even see his face and you hear him say, Styles, take 10 off the table, and Styles takes a $10,000 bundle back. And it's just, it's so like, manly and powerful and badass, and it was just like, oh my god, I can't believe this is Scott McCall. And it was a big deal.
It's a huge deal because I feel like it wasn't overly forceful, it wasn't cheesy, it wasn't overdone, you know, but at the same time, like, it was really serious and he meant it, and that was his form of negotiating, and he wasn't going to be a pushover about it. And I love that side of him.
Yeah, he didn't sound like nervous. He didn't sound like he wasn't sure what he was playing at. It was so hardcore, and it was like my favorite moment of the episode. I don't know. Yeah, like,
It was good. But when they're talking in that same scene, sort of, we get, you know, basically what the title of the episode is, The Dark Moon, and Araya asks if they know what the Dark Moon is. And Lydia says it's when the moon is least visible in the sky. It's a time of grief and mourning, that sort of thing. And, you know, it's a subtle nod to Allison. And it's not the first and only one that we'll get in this episode, but also I'm sure in the season. But I loved how it's still right from the beginning, ever present, and yet not in your face. Like, it's not all we're focusing on. Because I think it is important, like the title cards keep saying, you can't go back, to just move on but still be aware that that happened and that it's still on everyone's minds.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is very sort of present in that sense, like that she's kind of like, what are you doing with your lives? Why are you bothering with this? Like, we know what just happened to you. What what even, like, kind of thing. And I guess that kind of ties into Styles saying, like, yeah, we've lost enough. We don't like to lose, basically, which is why that they came for Derek. And, I mean,
yeah,
a lot of these people don't even know Derek. Like, Malia's his cousin, but she doesn't know that yet. And, like...
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I don't think I, like, put that together before.
Well, that's true. It's that. So Malia is his cousin. So if her and Styles get married, she'll, you know, he'll be marrying into the Hale family.
God.
Thinking ahead a bit. And Kira, I mean, she's vaguely met Derek and, like, but you also kind of get that addressed later on that these new people don't really know what's going on. As we said, yeah, sort of the last we saw of Derek, he was in that weird dream state thing with Styles. That's not really addressed. I mean, it may be addressed later on. It may be, you know, we see Derek in this episode kind of in a cobwebby coma coffin thing. You know, he's maybe that stuff in his head is happening during that time he's been in the cobwebby coma. I don't really know. We haven't had that explained yet, but we'll have to, you know, wait and see, I guess. But yeah, I mean, they all go to get Derek in Mexico. Yay for them. Friendship, magic.
Yeah, I know. I love it. But, and this is sort of an open-ended question. Like, this doesn't have a right answer. But why do you think everyone is so willing to rescue Derek? Because, like you said, half of them don't even really know who he is. And the ones that do have had issues with him before. And I realize that they've come a long way since then. But I just kind of wanted to know your opinion on why you think all of them are willing to band together and go after Derek.
I think because Scott says so. I think the others, Malia's probably just doing what she's told. Like, Malia, you know, is like, you know, Styles says that we're going to do this. I guess this is what we're going to do. Or that she has some allegiance. She's either, you know, feigning or really feels some allegiance to Scott, Scott's pack. I think Kira cares about Scott. I think Lydia has been in it long enough to just be invested in the entire situation. I mean, you get that flashback scene of them kind of looking for Derek, I guess, in Deaton's office and kind of being like, oh, where is he? And, you know, Lydia trying to use her banshee powers to see whether he's dead. But I think that at the end of the day, I think that Scott wouldn't let Derek fall behind and that the others would probably have their own reasons for doing what Scott says. And Styles, I don't know whether he would have done it off his own back. I mean, I would have liked to think that he would have. And he sounds pretty sincere, but, you know, no one's like, oh my God, Scott, I can't believe you dragged me along to rescue this miserable man or anything like that. But I don't know. I mean, maybe there's something we don't know yet. Like, I don't think they would have just left him behind, but that being said, like, maybe there's something more to it. Like, you know, some sort of information, or maybe they were in the middle of some sort of other mission. Also, who else is going to rescue Derek if they don't?
Oh, not Peter, that's for sure.
Maybe they had a pack meeting and Scott was like, look, guys, I know that he's a downer. I know that he's a poor conversationalist, but where all he's got? And everyone's like, oh, I guess that's really true. How pathetic. Like, there's, you know, Derek hasn't got anyone else to look after him. And he did, you know, have a really good relationship with Scott in 3B. So I feel like Scott wouldn't let him go.
Yeah, I basically feel the same way that you do. I feel like Scott is the one that probably cares the most about Derek. And if he says we have to go after him because he's in trouble, the other ones are going to follow because they are extremely loyal to Scott. But I think that Derek has made such a turnaround from season one, especially in the latter half of season three, that everybody's kind of on the same level now, and they realize, okay, Derek isn't this power-hungry alpha anymore. He knows what's important. He's changed a lot. He's sort of deferring to Scott's true alpha status, and he's here to help, and he's on our side. So I feel like, you know, I don't know if all of them could call Derek their friend, but I feel like that's definitely the direction that their relationship with him is going in.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's more like that bit in Firefly, where Simon is really confused by Mal not leaving him behind, even though he found out he was doing a dodgy behind his back. And he's like, why did you wait for us? And Mal just goes, you're on my crew. Do we need to have more questions about it, if you know what I mean? And Derek's on their crew. Like, and I don't know. And I think that even if Styles never verbalizes, you know, anything except snark about Derek, I think he knows exactly how many times that they have saved each other without question or felt for each other. And Lydia is a bit more of a kind of confusing situation, but she doesn't really have anything else. Like, you know, a lot of the things that were, she was tied to have been sort of destroyed, and she's stuck in this situation. And I think that creates bonds as well. So we'll have to see. But I do think that it is a kind of an unquestionable bond by now for most of them.
Yeah, I agree. And sort of switching gears, you know, the other side of that equation is the Calaveras, even though they don't have Derek, but they're obviously very present here. Do you think the Calaveras are bad guys? Because I'm sort of on the fence about this. I mean, they're hunters, which genuinely, like, I kind of tend to think of as good guys, even though there are bad hunters and good hunters and sort of, like, down the middle hunters. They were torturing Scott, which, you know, not the best thing, but they didn't kill him and they did let him go. So how are you feeling about that family right now?
I mean, I still have no idea why exactly they wanted Scott to, like, find out that they knew that Kate was there. They knew that Kate had survived. Obviously, they got her out.
Yes.
We see that. They suspect, heavily suspect, that Kate was the one that took Derek. They want to either bring in Kate just for their own sake, or they want to bring in Kate and Derek. I don't know why they'd want Derek. It may just be that they are looking for Kate and she's off with Derek or whatever. But I don't know why they needed Scott to, like, true alpha it out instead of them just being like, this is the deal. Like, why can't we all be on the same page here? I think they are very, you know, instinctively against the supernatural, like, you know, the way she was like, you brought a wolf into my house, like, in the same way the Argents were or are, you know, in general, I think that the hunters all are on the same, you know, basically the same moral ground, which is that they have these rules that they don't, you know, kill people who haven't, they don't kill wolves that haven't, you know, done anything, that are just like a victim of circumstance and stuff like that, but they are very, you know, instinctively prejudiced against them and stuff. So, you mean, I don't think they're any worse than Chris Argent was when he started the season, if you know, when he started the show, if you know what I mean. I think it's that sort of hunter. I still feel like that it might either be Chris or Victoria's mother, that woman. I don't know if that's ever going to be confirmed or anything like that, but I feel like there's some sort of connection there. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think that there's, you know, any really good and pure hunters, because they have that prejudice against the supernatural creatures that might be, you know, completely innocent. But, you know, she didn't hurt Scott, but she clearly does believe in, you know, killing them as soon as if they happen to bite someone else, if you know what I mean, if they break the rules and bite someone else. Not even kill someone else, but if he goes around making more werewolves, right, it means that he's fair game. So, I don't know. I'd put them on about the same level of, as Chris Argent and what he thought the hunters were meant to be when season one started. Obviously, he's had a bit of a change now. And then you have, like, Kate and Gerard, who are really bad and don't believe in any of the morals that were meant to be set for them. But I don't know. I mean, they're a bit hardcore, but they seem to be pretty strict on their own rules. So,
Yeah, because, I mean, even, I think it was Scott who said that they kind of see it as their job to enforce the law of the hunters and all of that. So I'm kind of on the same page that you are. I don't necessarily see them as bad guys, even though they're obviously antagonists to Scott and his group of friends. But I think that they're just really sticking to their principles as hunters, and I'm sure they've met a lot of bad werewolves over the years. I mean, Aurea has been around for a while, so she's got some of those prejudices, and you kind of can't blame her for that, especially when, you know, there were werewolves out there like Deucalion and the Alpha Pack. So I think it makes sense. I'm interested to see if their attitudes will change over the course of this season, or if they're going to continually be butting heads with Scott. And, you know, let's talk about that now, because they let him go and they say, if you make another werewolf, we're coming after you. And it's not a spoiler at this point because Jeff said it, but Scott is going to have his own beta. And so obviously she's going to be going after Scott. And I think that's a really interesting plot point to have for this season, both, you know, Scott having to deal with the consequences of his actions, but also him having to fight off these hunters who aren't necessarily bad guys. They're kind of just doing their job.
Yeah, I mean, you'd hope that he could just explain the circumstances and be like, can you just leave us alone? But apparently it's probably not that simple, funnily enough. And yeah, I mean, that's, you know, very obviously the setup of a, like, you know, we've got our eye on you. If you cross the line and do this, you'll be in trouble. And, you know, that is obviously going to be a plot point. And I mean, I don't know, like, there's also all of that talk about, I had to find out what kind of alpha you really are. Like, word got around about the true alpha? Like, what, you know, why did the torturing make him suddenly psychic, or, you know, whatever it, you know, what was going on there?
I don't think it
made
him psychic.
No, I know, but what was the, why were they pressuring him like that? Like,
you know, I don't really know. I think, I mean, obviously they know that he's an alpha, so I have a feeling if they know that he's an alpha, they know how he became an alpha, so they know that he's a true alpha. I think that her line there about what kind of alpha he really is was less about literally what type of alpha he was and more about him as a person, as an alpha, and what he's going to be up to.
How he's going to lead and what he's going to do with his time.
But that still kind of confused me, because I feel like he's proven that he's willing to do anything for his motley crew of a pack, including the humans, the kitsune, the banshee, and he seems like an overall good guy, and yet she was like, when you bite somebody, I'm coming after you. So that kind of confused me.
Yeah, I mean, because maybe it's fine for him to go be an alpha of, you know, a pack of motley collected people who he didn't actually turn, and then, but apparently adding to the you know, family is a no-no. But I don't know. It's a bit confusing, but we'll see. I don't really know what they want with him, but, like, I wonder if, like, you know, all of these mysterious thingies are going to start coming to Beacon Hills just because he's a true alpha. And
yeah,
there was all that talk in, you know, the other season when he became the true alpha as well, in the end of 3A, about, you know, people wanting him to be in the pack or kill people or whatever. And, I mean, does his true alpha powers go away if he just reverts to, like, the basic, you know, killing and violence and standard practices or whatever? Like,
I don't know, because
how does he stay pure or whatever?
I don't know if he has to stay pure. I think it was more about the act of becoming an alpha through his own willpower rather than taking it violently. So even if he ends up having to kill somebody, I'm not sure, like, that's going to be stripped away.
Well, we must hope so, or not.
Yeah, I would like Scott to stay as pure as possible. Although I think it is really interesting to have somebody like him come up against, you know, these really hard questions, because he is so noble. Like, he is so much like Captain America, Steve Rogers, who is, like, such a pure person with such a big heart that when you put him against the real world and these bad things and these people who kind of live in the gray area, it's really interesting to see if he stays the way that he is or if he has to sort of mold himself to adapt to those situations. And I love the idea that Scott wouldn't change himself, that he would do everything in his power to stay the same and continue to be such a noble person. But, you know, yeah. I think we're going to probably see a bit of that crop up in season 4.
And I mean, one of the more interesting things about Steve Rogers as well is that he manages to be that idealistic without being really sanctimonious. Like, he's, you never hear him being like, oh no, I can't kill people, how terrible. Like, he goes on, he's in the military, he goes on missions and kills the hell out of people and knocks them off buildings and all this various thing. And he's, you know, he's pretty ruthless while also being very idealistic, not, you know, for a certain party or a certain cause, but just for, like, what he believes is right. So it'll be interesting, you know, if, you know, when it does turn to, like, if Scott, you know, has to fight people and stuff like that, about whether it's ever going to be this, oh no, I mustn't do that, or if it's, like, more practical while still being very good-hearted.
Yeah, and I feel like the complete opposite of that, at least for right now, is Malia, because she does whatever is going to keep her alive, and I kind of love that about her. And so she's having a really hard time being human right now and kind of understanding how to be tactful and how to have friends. And Brooke really wanted me to give a shout out to Malia's crazy hair, because she's in love with it, and I am too.
Yeah.
I feel like it's,
Malia doesn't know how to brush her hair, and it's fantastic.
I feel like it's such a part of her personality, and it just makes her seem so wild, and it's perfect. I'm really, really enjoying Malia so far.
Yeah, and I mean, straight up, I mean, you kind of hear her be like, they've got Lydia, you know, oh, and she's kind of like, can't we just go? And she was like, no, we don't leave people behind. He's like, why? And they were kind of like, is that what you'd do if you're a coyote? And she's like, yes, real talk. And it's interesting to think about, like, how much, like, Malia thought she was a coyote when she was a coyote, if you know what I mean. Like, just because she was in the body, like, she didn't really retain that she was human.
Yeah.
And that's interesting to me as well, but
I hope that we get a little more explanation maybe of what it was like for her making that transition and then having to stay as a coyote, because at first I can imagine that's got to be really trippy, staying as a coyote and then having to sort of figure out the rules of the Wild Kingdom and sticking with them and surviving as a kid, basically.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously it's affected her a lot and continues to affect her, but I'd like to sort of get some sort of insight into what that was like for her and how much she still thinks about it. You know, if it's something that she just kind of accepts or if she's sort of traumatized by it.
Yeah, I mean, because at the end of last season, it seemed like she just wanted to go back to her coyote body and run off to the, well, you know, run off to the woods again. So I don't know if that's something she's still after or, you know, or if she can change at will or whatever. So, you know, it is odd.
But I think that, you know, your question of whether or not she's going to run off again, I think one of the reasons why she wouldn't is obviously going to be Styles. She does care about him a lot. And I was wondering, because we see that scene where she can't focus, she can't hear what they're doing to Scott, and she just can't flip on that switch that allows her to kind of tap into her heightened senses. Mm. And she ends up kissing Styles, and that sort of allows her to focus and zone in on what's going on with the others. So does this mean that Styles is Malia's anchor?
I mean, possibly. I don't really know. You know, it's probably different for all, you know, all of them, but it was definitely a bit of a, you know, wow moment, and it made me, you know, it does seem like they've been spending a lot of time together, and that, you know, she's really attached herself to trusting Styles, and Styles being the one to tell her what to do, if you know what I mean, like, you know, oh, this is how we do, you know, he relates her actions back to the others, like, that's an ongoing thing. But that kiss, do you think that they already have a thing, or do you think that that's the first time they did that since, like, Icon House?
Oh, good question. Wow, I'm not sure, because it didn't, like, he obviously looked surprised when she kissed him, but I also felt like they were both sort of comfortable with it. Like, it wasn't this whole thing that they had to discuss and break down and figure out, you know, what their relationship is like. So maybe it was the first time since Icon House, but it also didn't feel like it was something that they had never thought about, or like they hadn't been close before and almost kissed or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could go either way. But I, if it was the first time, I'm quite happy with that, because Styles does talk to her, or was talking to her prior like that. He, like, a little bit childishly, like a little bit like over-explaining and stuff, you know, expecting her to not understand, like, you know, kind of remember we talked about this and kind of thing. And I kind of like the idea that he wouldn't have necessarily, like, taken the initiative to kind of go there while she was healing and learning and not really a functioning adult, if you know what I mean. And if she made the move, yeah, whether it was now or whether it was another time, then, you know, he would possibly be more comfortable with it. But I don't know, it worked anyway, and she was able to kind of tap in. She does seem to have trouble controlling herself, like, both in, you know, her socialization and in her powers. Like, she doesn't really seem to be able to use it at will. So I'd say she's definitely not at the stage of transforming into a full coyote again. And then she hears about Kate, and Kate is obviously, she doesn't know who the hell Kate is, but she was like, Kate, what is Kate? And they kind of explain the whole story. You know, Styles tells her, and then later they tell, you know, Kira in the car as well. And for them, how that must have felt, you know, to realize that it was Kate, like, for Scott and Styles, and I guess Lydia as well, to realize that would have been, you know, quite shocking and quite traumatic, probably, especially given the recent Allison incidents.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, before all of that happens, we do get Brayden is back again, and I'm really upset because we didn't get Megan Tandy to rap her own intro.
Oh, yeah. See,
but that's okay.
Yes, I said to Karen that we would sing the intro to Without Me by Eminem. We could sing it now if you would like to sing it, but sorry.
I don't think I would, but thanks for offering.
We don't. But yes, you can hear it at the start of the episode. That's fine.
Yes.
Anyway, but, so Brayden's back.
I mean, really, yeah, Brayden's back, and I'm really excited. We talk about this a bit later on when we talk to Megan about the reception of her character and everything, but I loved Brayden right from the beginning. I thought she was such a cool, badass character, and she got killed off so quickly, quote unquote, and I was really, really disappointed, but they brought her back, and now she's going to be in the majority of the season, and I'm so excited that she's going to have such a big presence, because she's a really refreshing character. She's kind of hardcore, and she doesn't take any crap from anybody, and she's really tough, and it's going to be cool, I hope, to see her character sort of come in with the other ones and maybe bring her level of intensity down a little bit and actually get to know them as people. And, you know, who knows if they can actually be friends or if she's going to be super professional about everything, but I like the idea that maybe she'll start to care about these people.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something that, you know, is pretty hinted at in terms of what Megan was saying. And I mean, I also think that even if it, you know, even if it's not a hint, it's kind of a more of a prediction in terms of the whole idea of, you know, paid mercenary working in close quarters with people and not being able to sort of compartmentalize anymore. But we'll have to see how that all plays out, and we've got lots to talk about with Megan after this in terms of Brayden, which is exciting. But she seems like she's been, I guess, working as a lackey for the Calaveras for a while, and she's given to Scott's group as a guide to take them out to, is it La Iglesia? Is that how you say it?
Yep.
And, we are not in this, my country, Australia, we are, you know, Spanish is nowhere near as close to as commonly spoken as in America, so Spanish pronunciations are not my strong suit. Even, you know, we don't have Spanish place names and stuff the way you guys do. And I don't really understand what's going on with the Calaveras and what they want from Scott, because, you know, they took Kate. We see how they suspected that she might not be turned. They went and got her. They gave her the chance to, like, kill herself like hunters are meant to do, like Victoria did, and she tricked her way out of it. Another, you know, little bit of sort of Malia's, not bad moral code, but just, like, her kind of attitude was like, you know, they figured out that Kate didn't kill herself, and Malia was like, good for her, I wouldn't have done it either. And like, yeah, pretty much, I probably wouldn't have done it either, to be honest. I can't really imagine caring about being a werewolf more than I would caring about living, if you know what I mean. But she did kill a bunch of people to get out, which also sucks. She clearly like faked that she'd suicided and then, mm-hmm. you know, managed to get out. And I don't know if their whole deal is that this was several years ago, though. Have they just been like, oh my god, we lost her, and that they've been like trying to find her since then? Like, is that the Calaveras' whole deal?
Yeah, I would assume so, because how it sort of plays out in my mind, and correct me if I'm wrong, but yeah. they got Kate, they told her basically to kill herself because that's the way that it works there. She didn't do it, she escaped. Yeah, it's been however long since that happened, and now they know where Kate is, but they aren't able to get to her because Araya says that she sent several men out there, they haven't come back. So they basically get Scott and torture him to convince him that it, you know, to put pieces together that Kate was the one that took Derek and that she's the one that, like, that she hadn't died. She's actually this were-jaguar. And so they choose Scott to go after Kate because they believe he's going to be able to be the one to finally get her.
Like, that he'll have better luck than they will or whatever.
Right. And
why didn't they just say that from the start and being like, hey, pal, let's team up. Like, I have...
Well, the whole thing was that they didn't believe that he would believe that Kate was back unless they kind of made him come up with it on his own. And the only way that he could come up with it on his own was obviously by torturing him.
Okay. Yeah, I know, but it's, I don't know if the torture needed to happen, honestly, because they couldn't have, they just logicked it out of him. Did they have to use the torture?
Maybe they thought they had to. I mean, I think us knowing who Scott is, he would have been open to the idea and he would have been able to be convinced of that, but they don't know Scott. So to them, it probably
feel like they probably should have given Chris Argent a call before driving down to Mexico. I mean, I'm assuming they got those gun shells and stuff, you know, and the postcard with the logo on it to show to the video camera, you know, I'm assuming they got those from somewhere, but like
in the end, bullets were from Derek's loft. I don't know where the card came from, though, if that was left with it as a calling card. But then again, why would Kate have those
things? I thought that the bullets that he found in Derek's loft were the ones with the Argent crest on it, the ones that Chris was like, that's impossible.
Oh, no, I thought it had a skull on it.
Last season,
I think it was different, yeah, but the ones that Lydia had, the one that she dropped in the drink.
Yeah, but when did that happen? When did the Calaveras shoot up Derek's loft?
They were in there when Kate came, because didn't she shoot a bunch of them and then turn her gun on Derek at the very end of 3B?
Possibly, yes, but I thought that she had her own shells and that was the one that, like, her own shells, and that was the one that Chris was like, oh my god, this is not possible about.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm going to have to go and, like, watch how that played out. But regardless, that's fine. But I'm just, yeah, I don't know why they weren't like, hey, so, Chris Argent, give us a hand.
Yeah. I mean, the end of 3B is still very confusing to me, even though I've seen it several times. So if anybody has a more concise and clear explanation of it, that would be super helpful. But yeah, I mean, regardless of that, that all is going on and we find out about Kate and everything. And as the Jeep breaks down, which made me super sad because Roscoe,
I will never abandon this Jeep.
I know. Oh my God. I was so happy when he said that. Oh, it was beautiful. But Scott and Brayden have to go off on their own before it gets dark and try to rescue Derek. The others will be along as soon as Styles can fix Roscoe. And so Kira and Scott you know, they kind of say their goodbyes or whatever. They basically just hug, and Kira tells them to be careful. And they're sort of in a weird position because it's obvious that they like each other, but Allison's death is still really fresh. And I think both of them don't really know what to do because they still want to sort of...
appropriate for them to be boyfriend and girlfriend.
They want to honor Allison and her death and her life and her relationship that she had with Scott. But at the same time, if they have feelings for each other, they can't exactly deny that either. So I love this idea that it's not this easy, oh, I like you, you like me, let's be together. Like, it's a lot more complicated and realistic.
Yeah, speaking of that entire situation, I just want to give a shout out to the incredibly hurtful and heart-wrenching Tumblr post I saw the other day, which was like someone making like a fan art, like a social media fan art of like the characters basically like commenting on like Allison's like Instagram and Facebook wall and stuff like after her death, if you know what I mean. And one of them was like Scott writing like a private message to her about Kira, being like, I feel like this is the only way I can talk to you. I don't feel like going to like your grave is like actually you. I feel like maybe, you know, sending this feels like, you know, you could read it. I cried more at this Tumblr post than I did at Allison's actual death on the television by, like, a lot. Like, a lot.
Oh, my God.
And I'm going to send it to you.
Yes, please. I'm getting teary.
Hang on. Let me find it right now, and we'll just have some tragedy. So I'll just pause that.
Cry live on air.
Yeah, hang on.
Oh, God. I don't want to see it, but I really want to see it.
Yeah, you can thank Brooke for this one. Hang on.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Anything tragic usually comes from Brooke.
Hang on. Okay, here we go. Get ready for pain, Karen.
Oh, man. Oh, it's painful already. I don't, should I be like reading these?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
You should be reading, not out loud. No, not out loud. Just read them for your own, personal trauma. Just read them.
Live commentary or not.
Yeah, no. I don't think anyone needs that. Are you finished being sad?
No.
Okay.
Oh, okay. I'm finished being sad now. This one that's like the Instagram one, I'll never grow up, never grow up, never grow up, not me, and Styles comments, I wish you could.
Mm.
It hurts.
Anyway, the point is, Scott's a bit uncertain about having a new girlfriend, as per this Tumblr post and the episode.
Yes. So after that happens, Brayden and Scott end up at La Iglesia, and Brayden explains that it was built over the ruins of an Aztec temple belonging to the Nahual, and these are the werejaguars, they're shapeshifters. And I just really love this part because of the mythology and because we're obviously branching out into something else. I mean, we've gotten other creatures in last season, 3B. We obviously got the Japanese mythology, and I like that they're going in a new direction this time. And I'm really curious to see how much of the mythological they get into, because by the end of the episode, we see that obviously whatever Kate can do, like, it's pretty big, it's pretty significant.
Like, the biggest kind of, I would say, aside from some of the stuff that Jennifer was able to do in terms of like moving stuff around and making illusions and stuff, I think it was the biggest, whatever, you know, she did, like magic or, you know, supernatural processes, I think this is probably the biggest one.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. And season 5 Greek mythology, just throwing it out there. Please. Yeah. Please give it.
All right. You want some satyrs and like centaurs and stuff?
And Pegasus. That would be so cool.
I just want the pegs.
Yeah. Anyway, back on track.
So...
If nobody knows where that came from, they're probably very confused right now. But I got it. I totally got it.
Oh my god, I forgot to tell you. At the Supernova convention I went to that we talked about in the last episode, I saw for the first time ever someone cosplaying Megara. Like, perfect. Perfect. Like, looked like the movie. Like,
did you get a picture?
I don't know. Maybe. I'm sure there's a picture somewhere.
Yeah. That is so amazing. Anyway. I need more hits in my life. Anyway, so before the big reveal at the end, we get, like, one last scene. This is all of them in the car together, and this is after Malia, well, after they fix the Jeep.
Which they find this giant tooth in it.
Yeah, Stiles is really bad at being a mechanic, apparently. He doesn't know what half the car parts are, but, you know, that's okay. He gets it working. Malia goes off and tries to defend them against whatever creature is out there. She comes back. She gets hurt. Stiles basically says, "I thought you were leaving for good," and she says, "I would never leave without you." And my question is, how significant do you think this is for her? Because I feel like that's huge.
Yeah.
By herself for so long that she's sort of like, I was being funny when I put this in the doc when I said, hey, you know, has she imprinted on him? But it's kind of true because
I feel like it is really, true in some way.
Yes, like, really, really taken to Stiles.
She's really like, yeah, like he belongs to her or something. Like, it's like, you know, she's automatically just decided, no, this is the person that, you know, those bonds apply to. And I don't know why, but, you know, it's happened. And, I mean, I don't know why he thought that she was just going to run off into the darkness for good and, like, what her feelings for her are if he just thinks that she's that unstable, that, like, as soon as she's, like, confronted that she'll just run off forever, or if...
That's pretty logical, actually, yeah. Because if after everything she said were like, I would definitely just leave them. And, like, he didn't know before this that she wouldn't have left him. So for him to assume that she was just running off made a lot of sense to me. Mm. And I'm really curious why she's so taken with him as well. But I kind of wonder if it's because they are very similar in a lot of ways, because in 3B, Stiles was going through a lot of stuff and he was kind of going crazy. And I'm sure Malia feels like she's crazy sometimes because of everything that she's gone through. So she could probably, if she's going to connect to anybody, it's going to be Stiles.
Yeah, I mean, it does, but it seems like more than, you know, just a, you know, crush or even a boyfriend or anything. It seems something very instinctual, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, however she relates to things, she's just like, you know, like it's not even a question. Like, oh, no, but I feel that way about you. It's just like, nah, duh, you're my person, or in my, you know, whatever kind of packs coyotes have, or however they pair up or whatever. She's really just like, nah, duh. And it's kind of,
yeah.
I don't know, it's kind of strange. And he looks very confused by it as well. Like,
but also really happy. Yeah. Like, really happy. And I kind of wonder if this is going to change, if this feeling's going to continue to grow, if it's going to stay the same, if it's going to lessen, if she's going to sort of expand it to the group as a whole, maybe with Scott first, if she starts to think of him as her alpha, or do you think that it's just going to be Stiles because of, you know, whatever significant bond that they do have right now?
I honestly don't know. And I mean, I can't really imagine, you know, if he realizes he doesn't quite, you know, feel in love with her or whatever, and he likes someone else, I feel like Malia's not going to be too happy about that. Like, I hope it's not going to be a love triangle situation, but she seems very possessive, and it's funny, but, like, I don't know how it's going to be. And on the other hand, she might be, like, I can imagine, I don't know if the show would even bother going there, but I can imagine her just not having, you know, like I said about Jack Harkness, like, not really having any kind of rules in terms of relationships, and you know, say Stiles thought they were, like, together, and then maybe she hooks up with someone else, and she was like, yeah, but it's not a big deal, because you're my person, or whatever, like, and him being like, what, that's not what we, what, you know what I mean? Like, I can just imagine her having just very different rules for things, but I don't know what exactly, you know, her Stiles situation is, but he, you know, he seems confused and pleased, but I hope that they are both kind of on the same page, and that it isn't like a kind of, a, you know, you know, carer-caree relationship, but, like, that could end up being a bit like of a power imbalance, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and I would hope that her feelings of protectiveness and loyalty would expand to Scott and the others as well, the more that she hangs out with them and the more that she realizes how close they are, you know, that she would want to sort of be in the middle of that family.
Yeah, and good old Cousin Derek. Don't forget Cousin Derek.
Yeah, yeah. Last thing is we get Malia saying that she saw something, but she couldn't really see it. She smelled it, and it smelled like rotting and death. So that's all very frightening and everything. And they end up meeting up with Brayden and Scott, who have been looking for Derek. They found Derek, kind of. And
I mean, sorry, before we get to this, can I just talk for a second about the catacombs that they were in, like, searching for him in the temple?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't encounter any of those things in there, did they? The things Malia saw?
I had assumed that's what it was, but we didn't see what they saw.
Yeah, I mean, they saw something, but, like, or was it meant to be more were-jaguars? Like,
I assumed it was the same thing that Malia saw, but yeah. I don't think we really know one way or another.
Then we got to continue the Teen Wolf canon of the werewolves being able to punch through 3 feet of concrete. And when I watched it, I was absolutely uncontrollably laughing because I was reminded of the Derek fist style thing. I want to redo that sentence. But yeah, the whole, you know, oh, you're going to be, you know, show me the fist. You're really going to be able to punch through that? And oh, God, they're ridiculous. But yes, you were sad that they ruined the ancient carving?
Yes, the art history nerd in me was crying a lot. That was very sad. But, I mean, if it's between that and saving Derek, then I guess I'm glad they saved Derek. But, holy cow, how surprised were you about that ending?
Yeah, it was a little bit insane. So, basically, I mean, you've seen the episode now. They kind of find Derek and they're like, and you know, Malia hasn't really met him and she's like, is that him? Is that Derek? And Styles kind of is just like staring and he's like, sort of, because it's like 15-year-old baby Derek played by Ian Nelson, who we saw in the flashback episode back in season 3A, just looking dirty and shell-shocked and we don't know what the hell happened here. How Kate managed or the temple managed to de-age him from his, you know, we did see him, you know, Tyler Hoechlin Derek in his coffin cobweb coma thing, like in the middle of the episode, you kind of got an image of him being taken away. And, in, you know, in that scene with Lydia, I think she said something about him like, you know, he doesn't feel alive, but he doesn't, you know, he doesn't feel dead, but he doesn't feel alive either. So, you know, she said something like that. What did she
say? Yeah. And, no, I know what you're talking about.
And so, you know, it's really interesting. And so he was in some sort of, like, slow cooker or something. I don't know what happened, but he, like...
Did you just say slow cooker?
Yeah. Look. and you know, they defrosted him or, like, I don't know what they did, but they de-aged him, basically. And I don't know whether that's Kate or whether that's something else or why they would want to do that. Like, it, you know, or if it was just incidental. And we don't know how the hell this is going to be solved. I presume it will be solved because Tyler Hoechlin is in the rest of the season.
Right. There's so many questions from this. Yeah, like you were saying, how did they do it? How are they going to fix it? Just everything. And I think that as crazy as this seems, as crazy as it actually is, I think it's so cool that they decided to go down this road and every time they do something like this, it expands the Teen Wolf universe. Now we know that something like this is possible, and we've always said that Teen Wolf is a very realistic show, despite the fact that it is a supernatural show. Mm-hmm. And so when they kind of pull out these big things like this, it makes you kind of go, oh, here's another little piece of the puzzle to add in to the overall picture that shows us what is possible in this world. And while this might seem a little far-fetched right now, given the past stuff that we've gotten that's been a bit more realistic, I just think it's so cool that they're kind of opening the door a little bit more to show us, you know, what these characters are capable of.
Yeah, I mean, it's completely insane, but yeah, I mean, it's just going to be very interesting. I mean, he's young, like, he's really young. I don't know, you know, he was only meant that, you know, Ian Nelson Derrick was only meant to be about 15. I presume he's meant to be younger than the kids are now, if you know what I mean, that he's meant to be below the age of Styles and Scott and stuff. And I have literally read a fan fiction where Derek gets de-aged that much, though I can't remember if he loses his memory. Do you think it's going to be just him in that body, or do you think it's going to be his memory, like he's literally doesn't know who they are and stuff like that?
Oh, wow. I assumed that it's literally him as his younger self. Yeah.
If it's present day's Derek's mind that just happens to be in child Derek's body, can you imagine how they'd have
him
acting?
He's going to be so pissed.
It would be so funny. And I don't think it will be that, but I want it to so badly now. Oh, he'll be so mad. Oh, my God, it'll be so good. And Peter would laugh and laugh.
He would. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Okay. All right. No, it's not going to be that. It'll be too funny.
Yeah. So, overall, how did you feel about the premiere for season 4?
Yeah, good. I felt good about it. The end. No, I felt like it was really, like, as you said, like a different kind of feel to it. But also, like, as I said, kind of the current team that's there, you know, even though they address the fact that Allison died and, you know, that they're in that process of change, you know, the units that they have actually kind of feels like really long running and like it had never been different. And I know it has been different. It's just, I don't know, it feels like a new era, but not in a bad way, and it just is an instant fit, I think.
Yeah, they had to sort of change it up, I think, for season 4 for a lot of different reasons. 3B was so dark. Like, when I think of 3B, I literally think of the color black, because it was such a prevalent tone over that whole part of the season, and they had to go in a different direction for so many reasons. But part of it is that we've lost a main character. We've lost the female lead. And so the show in general, by itself, without them even doing anything to it, is going to feel different because of Allison's absence. So to me, it makes total sense that it was have this whole different tone to it. And I really enjoyed it too. I thought it was a very strong premiere episode, and it gave us a lot of what we love, what we have loved about Teen Wolf right from the beginning. And yet it still feels grown up like season 3 did, and it feels like they're moving in a different direction with different storylines. They're not just rehashing what we've seen so many times before. So I'm super, super optimistic about season 4. I think it's going to be a really good one.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. But I really hope so, and I'm liking it so far, and I feel like there's going to be a lot of fun to be had as well as trauma, so that's nice.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we like about Teen Wolf anyway, right? So, fun and trauma.
Yeah. And so, the following week's episode is called, or as far as we know, unless they decide to change it in the next week, is called 117 or 117. And I realized the other day that I actually know exactly what this is, but we can't tell you, so... Bye.
Oh, that was so mean.
Yeah, 117 is probably the most random episode title that they've ever had, but I realized that I actually know what it refers to.
Significant. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, it's significant, and it's just something that we happen to come across. It involves some of the scenes we saw filming or when we went to the set, so that's fun.
We'll tell you about it next week.
Yeah, we'll tell you next week. It'll be great. We'll tell you all about the conversations next that we had on set that we weren't allowed to tell you about before. That'll be fun. But yes, so we're about to let you listen to the interview with Megan, where, you know, we talk a lot more about the season 4 premiere and the plans for Brayden and sort of the history of the character and all of those kind of good things. But just before we get into that, we'll sign off from our recap part with a non sequitur. So, Karen, do you want to go ahead with that?
Yes. My question for you is, have you ever had any recurring dreams as a kid?
Kind of. I never had, like, the same exact dream. However, I have had very, very similar themed dreams, which is I still do and used to a lot, like, you know, several, you know, times a year or whatever, have dreams about weird, like, coastal scenes and really weird dreams about whales. I have a lot of dreams about, like, various whale type creatures being along a cliff or like a public beach with whales really close to shore, and not in like a scenic whale watching beautiful way, like in a really unrealistic apocalyptic kind of way. It's really,
oh my god,
it's really weird. It's like, it's not like, oh my god, how beautiful whales. They're usually like stressful situations and like weirdly deep water or like falling into tanks. I've had quite a lot of dreams about like falling into being in tanks at like a zoo or an aquarium, like those big seal tanks or whatever. Like, and I never got eaten by a whale or anything. And I love whales. Like, it's, they don't end up being like nightmares or anything like that. But I have a lot of weird dreams about whales being very close to me in very shallow water, like in, not like flailing out of the water, but like that there's an immediate, that the beach immediately becomes like really deep for a whale, you know, whale depth.
Yeah.
And it's really weird. I don't know. But yes, that's happened. I have those kind of dreams all the time. It's really weird.
I used to have a lot of dreams about tornadoes because I'm terrified of tornadoes. We get them quite a bit in upstate New York, more than I think people realize. And
really?
I just always used to be, I mean, I still am. They still scare the crap out of me. I used to have a lot of dreams about tornadoes, like literally just the sky full of tornadoes and me trying to find a way to get away from them. And it's horrible. But actual recurring dreams, I've had one. I don't have them anymore. But when I was a kid, I used to have one where I was on the top of a bunk bed and I would fall and I would just keep falling. And it was like a bunk bed that was stacked like 1,000 beds high. And I would just keep falling and falling and falling. That was pretty horrible. And then I also had one where I was stuck on railroad tracks and like the train was coming. And I remember literally getting hit, or like the split second right before I was hit, waking up and like jumping up like I thought an actual train was coming.
Oh my god.
That was actually a pretty terrifying one.
Yeah. I also have I have a lot of dreams about like being friends with various celebrities in like,
you have the best dreams. I have a lot ever.
Of, they're not recurring, but I have a lot of dreams about like having casual hangouts with like either characters or celebrities that I'm currently thinking a lot about, which is I guess normal for anything you think that much about, but like they're not, and they're usually very understated. They're not usually like celebrity life. Like, I actually had a really sad dream the other day that like that Corey Monteith, who is a high school friend of mine, but I think in the dream he was alive and Lea Michele was the one that had died, and it was really, it was a strange dream, but that's the kind of weird celebrity dreams that I have. But
I've had several dreams about the podcast.
I've had heaps of Teen Wolf dreams, which I love telling you guys about and being like, so this weird thing happened. What dream about the podcast did you have?
Oh, I don't know, just that we all like live together in this,
really?
Like, yeah, it was this so one. Cute. I know I told you about this. Well, it wasn't cute because we were like on the run and we were living in like a barn and I had to like jump through a window. It was very stressful. I don't know. But I've had several dreams that I was on Teen Wolf, that like I had to read lines and actually like act on the show. And it's terrifying. Like, they are not pleasant dreams because I'm a terrible actor and I just... Yeah, it was very stressful.
Oh, wow.
I don't like those dreams, actually.
Well, I'll let you know if I have a fun Teen Wolf one.
Okay. But,
you know, I feel like I had something like that. Oh, I had a dream I was in One Direction. I was me. I don't even know. Like, it was so weird. And it was like, either I was in the body of one of the One Direction, and I don't usually have dreams where I'm not in my own body. Like, that's very, very, very rare. But I was, like, singing, and then I think I was a strange sixth member of One Direction, and I was really stressed because I was on stage, and in the songs, they don't all sing at the same time. They have their parts, you know, that they sing. And I didn't know which part I was meant to sing and, like, whose lines I was taking over, and I was, like, fucking up, and it was horrible. That was really bad. But anyway... Yeah, we'll leave the dreams there, shall we?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, after that bit of frivolity, we shall leave you with our chat with Megan Tandy, who we were lucky enough to record with. Basically, we were very lucky to get the screener, so we were able to organise the interview before the episode officially aired, so we all knew what we were talking about, but it couldn't be released till... obviously the episode did, so we managed to put this all together in one day, pretty much, like our recap and our interview. And yes, you shall enjoy this. You must, because you worked very hard on it, so just please enjoy it. So, but yeah, sorry that got a bit demanding. Anyway, we'll leave you with Karen and I chatting with Megan Tandy, our lovely Brayden, who she'll be with us for most of season 4. So bye-bye, but we'll be back in 1 second. Bye.
Bye, guys.
So hello again, listeners. You thought we were gone, but actually we have a small surprise for you. In advance of the premiere happening, we decided to contact our new favourite Teen Wolf star, Megan Tandy. Sorry.
Hello.
Do you say Megan or Megan?
Megan.
Good. Just checking. Megan Tandy, who plays Brayden, who obviously you just watched kick ass in the premiere. And we wanted to get Megan Tandy on and chat about the premiere and what's to come, because it's just been announced that you're going to be in 9 of the 12 episodes this season.
Yes, and I'm honestly so incredibly excited about that because, I mean, I showed up in 3A and I was pretty much, you know, dead.
Yeah.
I came back, you know, for like 2 seconds in 3B. So for me to be in 9, I'm like, I'm on cloud 9. Like, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, just to give a little bit of Brayden history so everyone remembers, in like the 3A premiere, you know, you've got the motorbike. She's got the motorbike. She saves Isaac. She appears to be killed by Deucalion, you know, and our very first impressions, you know, when we got the idea that, you know, Morel sent her, our first impressions was like, is she part of like the druid group? Is she like, you know, like you know, like Jennifer and like Morel and Deaton and stuff? And then it kind of came out that she's, you know, a hired gun, like a soldier, a mercenary.
Yeah.
In 3B, when it turns out that Deucalion hires her to save Peter and Derek for reasons we don't yet really know about. And, you know, even though he was the one that tried to kill her. So how quickly did you get an idea of sort of who Brayden's character was before coming back for season 4?
I would say I probably kind of had an idea towards the end of shooting for 3A, because it was really, all of it honestly was really up in the air, because I mean, I really honestly was supposed to be like dead. I was written to be, you know, slashed and dashed by Deucalion, and then it's so funny, it actually said in the script, hopefully Jeff's okay with me revealing what that was, but in the script for 3A, it was supposed to be like this shot of me like having blood gushing out of my throat, you know, it's Teen Wolf, and like my eyes were supposed to roll back into my head, and all this like dramatic crazy stuff, and we didn't shoot it at all, which was awesome. And I always had this thought like, oh my God, maybe I'm coming back. And so towards the end of 3A, they kind of, you know, gave me the hint like, hey, we might be bringing you in. And we're thinking about maybe you'll just be kind of like that person that's in here with a gun shooting things. And yeah. And then all of a sudden now Deucalion's the one that hired me. So yeah, there's a lot going on here. But yeah, I found out towards the end of 3A.
Yeah.
And that's really exciting, too, because I know a lot of people, when they first saw you in 3A, really loved your character right off the bat. And, you know, everybody was so sad after that first episode when it looked like you died. But then came back, and it was really exciting.
You were one of the people that I remember right back in 3, because 3A is when our show started going live. We recapped season 1 and 2 as like a binge watch. Uh-huh. And then we started doing live episodes in conjunction with 3A, and it was like one of the first things that I remember our sort of team trying to track down was your casting and the hints about you before the premiere started, before you had a name and stuff like that, and it was before she had a name, and it was, yeah, so it's... It's really cool that you didn't die.
I know. It's been a long time coming with the girl. And because, I mean, that's what my name was supposed to be. It was just supposed to be the girl. And, now I've got a name and I've got a full-blown little character. And, I'm in 9 episodes. So,
It's amazing. And it's really cool that they would, believe so much, I guess, in the potential of a character, just from...
Yeah.
The couple of scenes to be like, oh, we can make this a really good plot, which is such a cool way to think and, give those opportunities to people.
It's so amazing, too, because at one of the wrap parties, Jeff was telling me and a few other people that I, inspired him to want to write more, which is so weird because I've never heard that before, and it's probably the best compliment you can ever get from a creator on a show.
Yeah.
Because... with me being dead and everything, that would have been it. But he was like, for some reason, with the way that I was, portraying the girl and my commitment to the storyline, he was just like, we just wanted to create more for you. And I was like, well, thank you very much. I wasn't complaining.
Before we get into the premiere stuff, I have a question that's been sort of preying on me since, I guess, we saw Brayden come in, then the end of 3B, we saw the stuff with Kate, which is that Brayden has the sort of hardcore scarring from having her throat slashed by Deucalion. And then we kind of find out, and obviously he was a major alpha, he was the alfalfa, he was the demon, whatever he was. And then we have Kate's whole plot of being turned by Peter with a throat slash. Brayden, unless I'm totally wrong, obviously isn't turned in any way because she has the scarring, and if she was a wolf, it would have healed. So is there any thoughts on why she survived but wasn't turned, or is this addressed, or is this a spoiler, or is it just it didn't happen to cut deep enough and it was just a surface wound?
I don't know. I can just say that, maybe it's something that could potentially turn into something later on in the season. I just know from where we are at this point, I've got some lovely scars, and I haven't necessarily turned or anything at this point. So why I didn't do the whole wear Jaguar Kate thing, I have no idea. But that's really all I can say about that.
That's fine. It's just an interesting comparison.
Yeah, I know. It is. It actually is kind of funny because there's a couple of fans. They were like, wait a minute, you both had your neck slashed. You guys should be like the two werejag wenches that fight each other. It's so hilarious. And who knows? Maybe it'll happen. I don't know.
Jag wenches. That's amazing.
I know. It's, it's so funny. That's a word that I'm like always constantly saying. So it was like, I don't know.
So with the scars and everything, I'm really curious what the makeup process for that is like, and if that really helps you get into character.
Oh, yeah. I absolutely love going into the special effects trailer because Chris and Eric, they do such a great job, and they actually have to mold my scars, I think, 2 or 3 days in advance, and they have to actually freeze them because I guess if you don't freeze them, it kind of it melts or something. But anyway, they literally very carefully place it on. It's got to be placed in the exact same spot every single time. And when I have that, just as I'm, right before I'm hopping into being Brayden, it just helps because it's really like my battle wounds, this is like my armor, this is to kind of remind me this is where I've come from. I just got slashed by Deucalion. It helps me In that, like, I'm just a really, really strong, badass character. And so when I'm looking at it, it just kind of reminds me, it's like, okay, I'm not supposed to be this sweet little thing. I'm supposed to be like this strong, like crazy mofo that's like in here to save the day, you know?
Yeah.
But honestly, it's kind of weird. I used to be Miss California, and a lot of people thought that, you know, me having these scars was just going to be the worst thing ever. I think it's honestly like the dopest thing they could have ever put on me. And every single time I'm like, let's put some more scars, because it's just, it's awesome. It really helps with the character. So I love it.
Yeah, I mean, is it sort of the toughest role in terms of attitude and look that you've ever played? Is it the kind of role that you expected to be playing?
Well, you know what? I always have wanted to be like this, like an action kind of vixen role. Like, that's always kind of been my little in the back of my head kind of role that I wanted to do. And I can definitely say this is pretty close to that. And it's by far probably the best role I think I've ever been allowed to portray, because of the whole scar issue, and because we're in this whole supernatural world of wolves, and now we got werejaguars and foxes and coyotes. Like, it's just fun. It's so much fun. Like, I love it.
Well, we are very excited by it as well. So, I mean, with the premiere episode, I have a couple of sort of technical questions before we get into the nitty-gritty plot. I mean, you've got that motorbike in the premiere of 3A, and then, again, you get to ride it in the premiere of 4 when it's revealed that you're the guide for Scott and co. in their Jeep.
Yes.
Do you ever get to really ride the bike, or is it a stunt?
Oh, Lord, it is definitely a lovely stunt double. Oh, I wish it were me, but yeah, they have to put the real people on there. It's this great girl, her name's Mima, and she does such a great job. And it's funny, in 3A, there was about 4 different stunt doubles in that entire opening sequence, and it was actually a bunch of men, which was really weird.
Riding the bike?
Huh? Yeah,
on the bike in the desert.
Trip. Yeah. Yeah, riding on the bike. It was actually like 3 different men with wigs on that were riding. It was
nice.
But yeah, I get to do like things on the green screen where they're moving it back and forth. But I mean, the whole thing where, you know, I'm riding down on the dusty road. Yeah, that might be somebody else.
Oh, well, as long as you get a cool picture of you in leathers on the bike, that's all you need.
Exactly. We can pretend it's me, you know.
Speaking of the desert location, where was that filmed? Like, was that – because Teen Wolf doesn't go out and about on location too much.
Right.
So that was a bit of a departure. What was that set like?
It was actually shot in Santa Clarita, which is not too far from where the stages are. And it was actually pretty awesome. Apparently, this is where they also shot some scenes from Spider-Man, which was really awesome. And it literally is just this dusty, crazy looking area that has this really, really, really nice, like very authentic looking set pieces that have been built. And you take that and then you throw some dust in the air and a big old fan to blow it, and you look like you're in Mexico.
Oh, wow. So it's an outdoor, on like a purpose built.
Yeah.
Outdoor Mexico set kind of thing that just lives in the desert and people can hire it.
Which is so weird. It's always there. And it's funny because, I mean, I've seen Spider-Man and I'm trying to think, like, what scene was this in? But perhaps maybe they changed it and made it look a little different for us. But, yeah, it's always up there constantly. And we just go up there, use it, and then we peace out.
That kind of thing's incredible. Like, I just found out about something like that in Australia that's like, there's like a 2-kilometer stretch of like raised highway somewhere in like the back of the bush that was like built for Mission Impossible or something, and they hire it out to people. And you just like randomly drive it and find up this like slab of highway that just like starts and ends, and it doesn't go anywhere. And it's like a set in the middle of the bush. Oh, it's kind of seems crazy, but like, yeah.
Yeah. And see, the thing is like these companies, they'll build things like that and usually they take them down. But I think if it's like private property or whatever, they can leave it up and then just rent it out to different shows or movies. So it's a good way of getting some income coming in.
That's cool. That's fun.
Yeah.
Were there any, like, I mean, obviously you said it was more like a set than an actual place, but was there any difficulty filming those desert scenes because of all that dirt and dust and the fans and all of that? Was that hard?
Yes. Oh my goodness. That was probably the most difficult part because there was literally, there's no wind. There's no wind. But when you, I'm telling you, these fans, I'm talking like the big, big movie, like fans, they turn it on and there's a person right in front of it with a big pile of dust that's just like shaking it in front of the fan. And it's just blowing in your eyes. You can't breathe. It's crazy. Like poor Shelly, she had to get some eye drops and same thing with Arden. Like it was, it was nuts. And I think it was kind of funny because I got to wear the helmet, you know, so I was fine for a while. But then
yeah,
like, you need to take the helmet off and run up to the van. I was like, damn it. So, but other than that, it was, yeah, that was probably the most difficult part.
Yeah. I mean, it's the whole, instantly, the whole episode, the cinematography, you know, the on-location set, it just gives a really different sort of feel and a different life to the show, which is really, really exciting.
Absolutely.
Is there potentially going to be any more out and about on location things for Teen Wolf? Like Teen Wolf goes to the beach, Teen Wolf goes to the Alps, you know, like, I don't know. We can dream.
That would be awesome. If they went to the beach, they sure as heck better be writing Braden into that scene. That would be awesome.
Eric Hale on the beach sulking.
Yep, and then I could just go rescue him from sulking. You know, you just never know. I think so, yes. I mean, there's not really a whole lot of that going on because, honestly, they have such amazing set decorators. It's just not even funny. Like, I've walked onto the stages one time, and I seriously thought I was, like, for example, the catacombs, which you see in the premiere episode, like, I thought I was literally in a freaking hole, like, in the catacombs, but this was all a set. Like, they built all of that. So it's like when you've got such amazing, talented people like that, you don't really need to go on location. But here and there, it's good to do that because it kind of just gives it, I don't know, it just brings more dimensions to the whole scenery, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The catacombs, speaking of that, we were on set and we know that Derek's loft, which may or may not still exist, I have no idea if they've blown it up by now, but that is one of the first sets they have that had, like, a roof, like a closed-in, because a lot of sets don't have a roof. Did the catacombs, were they enclosed? Did they have roofs and stuff?
Actually, yeah, they did. They did have a roof on there, which is kind of interesting, but I think they just wanted it to really, really look dark, and plus they needed to hang, you know, the spider webs and all those things for Scott and I to, you know, push through and pull through. So, yeah, no, those were enclosed. And honestly, it was getting a little claustrophobic because, I mean, I think Posey as well, like we're both kind of, we just don't like being in enclosed spaces. And so even though we were just filming, like being in there, I'm telling you, like you really thought you were in the friggin' hole. It was crazy.
That's awesome. I mean, it's horrible, but also.
Yeah. You know. It's great for the fans. It's great for the fans.
So I sort of have a question departing from that. I mean, it's related because going back to 3A, the first time that we see Braden, I mean, she's a pretty badass character right from the beginning, but I felt like she's changed a lot since then. And, maybe her outlook on life is a little bit darker now that she's been, you know, sliced and diced and everything that she's been doing. Do you feel like she's evolved a lot since 3A? And do you think that she has continued evolving?
Well, you know, it's interesting to me. I actually kind of feel that she could be the same because at the end of the day, you know, she's just looking for the dollar. You know, whoever's going to hire her, that's her job. And in 3A, you know, she was sent there, if you will, to do what she needed to do. Yeah, she got sliced across the throat, but it kind of comes with the territory. It's her job. So I feel like she would be a little jaded from the whole scarring thing, but at the end of the day, it's a job. She had to do it, and she's just going to keep doing jobs as long as people keep paying. Like, I don't feel like it's really changed her a whole lot, because I feel like if it had, she wouldn't be so nice to go and save Derek and Peter. You know what I mean? Like, if it had taken her in a right. different direction, she would want to go and, you know, hurt them or, you know. So I feel like she's still just, you know, doing her thing. She's just, you know, she's ready for hire.
Yeah. I mean, I think that getting hired by Deucalion, like, agreeing to have Deucalion hire her, even though he was the one that almost killed her.
Yeah, the guy that slashed her.
It's a pretty good impression of her attitude, you know, towards the job and, you know, how it's, you know, it's, oh, it's not personal. Not personal that he slashed me across the throat. You know, no big deal. We're all just, you know, we're all just combatants,
no,
you know.
No big deal that he just, you know, scarred my face, gave me a couple of keloids, you know. Yeah. No big deal. No That's big deal. Fine. I mean, yeah, all I can say is with that, hopefully one day it'll be answered for everybody as to why that particular person did it and then why I went and let this person hire me. Hopefully it's an answer that everybody will be getting.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that sort of is connected to, you know, the idea of why Deucalion cared about Peter and Derek being saved. So, yes, that would be something that would be very interesting to everyone.
Mm-hmm. And I agree.
And then it's just been revealed as well that you have some new employers. Brayden will have some new employers switching teams, you know, because the money's good. And that is Derek and Peter themselves. So how do you like your new bosses then?
I think they're great, and it doesn't really hurt that they're both good looking. And I feel if Brayden is anything like me, you got these two hot guys with these great bodies saying, hey, can you help us out? She's definitely going to take the job. So I think it's a good thing. It's a good thing.
Yeah. We do know, but we can't say publicly exactly what she's going to be doing with them, but they've managed to, you know, beat the Calaveras' price because the Calaveras, you know, obviously found Brayden and hired her to presumably either track down Kate or just help track down Kate. I mean, do you think she'd been working with the Calaveras for a while before Scott showed up in Mexico?
I think it's actually kind of possible, because otherwise it's like, how did these people out of nowhere even know about Brayden?
Yeah.
So I feel like, I mean, unless she was just, you know, riding around Mexico, just having fun, there definitely must be some sort of I don't know, maybe I've worked with them before, you know, maybe we all did something and then I just branched out and did my own thing. I have no idea, but yeah.
I mean, that's kind of a big part of the fandom, you know, what fandom likes to do. Are you familiar with the term headcanon yet?
You know, I've seen that, but I actually don't know what that is. Okay. What does that mean?
I was asked to explain this to you. Basically, what it is, to a fan, a headcanon, a canon is like it's a historical word, like the canon of, I think it was like either the Bible or the first thing of literature. It meant like the official written text. So the canon of a show is the official true facts that happen in the show or that the creator says is true, if you know what I mean. So and then a headcanon is a person's personal belief about what they believe to be true about a character, whether that's, you know, that, you know, someone might have a headcanon that Scott and Stiles have been friends since they were 4 years old, or someone might have a headcanon that they met when they were 13, if you know what I mean. And it's usually more than a theory. It's someone's really true belief about the, you know, what they would want to be true for the character. And so a lot of actors have headcanons for their character that they just don't call them that. It's just a big part of the job, which is to come up with their own beliefs or backstories or personal opinions and ideas about their own character. Edie Mays, who I'm not sure if you've got to meet, given that her time on set didn't really overlap with yours, but she has a million for Victoria Argent. She loves talking about all her, you know, beliefs and her, you know, any moment she can tell you what Victoria Argent would be thinking about. But in regards to Brayden, we just wondered if you had any sort of opinions or personal ideas about her past, like how she came into the profession of being, you know, being a supernatural hired gun. Like, do you think she came from a family of, you know, of hunters or a family of, you know, supernatural? How did she find out about the supernatural world? Is that ever addressed, or is that, do you have any ideas about that?
Well, I know so far that none of that has been I guess you could say, addressed or anything, because, I mean, I really was only there for just that one thing in 3A and then in 3B. Mm. But I feel like from, like, the little tidbits and things that I've chatted with even Jeff, I feel like, you know, perhaps in my past, I was definitely a part of maybe the military or something. Mm-hmm. And somewhere, some way, somehow, I found out about this whole thing that was going down in Beacon Hills. And this is where it's kind of weird because, you know, I'm a good guy, you know, but at the same time, I'm letting bad guys hire me. And I don't even know what the whole purpose of me going, like, for example, at that time, I didn't know why I was going after Derek and Peter. I don't know why I'm saving them. That's just what I'm told to do. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I feel like there must have been some way, somewhere in my past with even in the military that I must have gotten kicked out or something. And I'm basically on my own. I don't know who the heck to trust, but at the same time, I need the money. And so I'm basically just taking whatever job, whoever's going to give it to me, whoever's going to pay me, and I'm just going out there and doing it. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, yeah. I feel like it's just got something to do with my past in the military. Otherwise, I don't think Braden, as of right now, has any supernatural connections that would have led her directly into this. It's got to have something to do with her as a mercenary.
Cool. Yeah,
sorry.
I mean,
sorry if that didn't answer your question.
No, it completely does. But what do you think her reaction would have been when she was kind of hiring herself maybe as a mercenary out for the, you know, the underground people, you know, gangs or mafias or whatever, and then found out, oh, wait, it's not just normal people. There are frickin' werewolves in the world.
Right. I know. That's so random.
Yeah.
I feel like for her, honestly, she probably didn't believe it at first, but because there's like this little thing that maybe perhaps she might have heard a little bit of it when she was in the military and working and doing that kind of thing, mm-hmm. that when she got thrown into it, it wasn't that big of a surprise. It was just more of like, okay, I'm in this now. I'm not freaked out about this. I'm going to actually go and do this. Like, I feel like it came more from like a curiosity about it because she had heard about it. Because otherwise, I mean, it is a little weird to go and save Isaac, who's all cut up and beat up, and then I've got these two random werewolves, you know, Max and Charlie, chasing after us, but I already know that, you know, who they are. It's like, where did all that come from, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like I must have been briefed somewhere.
Yeah.
You were just saying that, you know, you're a good guy, but at the same time, you were hired by somebody like Deucalion, who's obviously done a lot of bad things in the past. And even Jeff has said in interviews that Braden is kind of on the moral fence. And I was just wondering, because in the premiere, she says if she got paid enough money, she would kill Scott. I mean, that's her job. And, you know, a girl's got to eat. And I was wondering if you thought there was any point at which Braden would be like, no, this is too much. Like, or is it really all about the money for her?
I feel like the one day that she starts to actually like care about what's happening, and it's no longer about the money, it's more about who she's actually saving, who she's protecting, or who she's going after, you know, to kill. I think once she starts to care, then it's not, none of that's even going to matter. I think that's what he means about the whole moral thing, because it's like, morally, I'm not really giving two craps about what I'm doing. It's just the dollar amount. But if I'm starting to care about these people, the pack or whatever it may be, mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe it's not about the money anymore. Now it's about protecting these people that I've actually developed a relationship with.
I mean, that's something that would be nice to see. I mean, Braden comes across as kind of pretty, the way she talks is pretty cold and gruff and matter of fact, even when she's kind of talking to Scott about Kira, like the whole, you should have kissed your girlfriend. She's kind of really gruff about it and kind of awkward. But do you think that she has that sort of coldness as a front, or do you think that she, you know, she is actually developed that way and then that might start to change?
Well, I would like to believe that it's because that's actually how she was, and that this is just a front. Mm-hmm. And so she's just putting it out there because she's got to be strong. She's got to come off as this, you know, this really tough badass. But I think if you were to ask Jeff, he would say, no, this girl is just badass, and that is her. That's what he would say. Because I remember asking him about something that we were filming, and I was like, now, wouldn't I really be like this? And he was like, no, you're the badass. You've got the gun. You're just in here to do your job and shoot the people. So, yeah, I think – yeah, if you ask me, she's putting on a front. But, you know, Jeff, He'll tell you that's her. That's her. Stone and cold.
Well, you know, there's always room to move, I think, in that, you know, and obviously that you were quite inspirational in getting the character to even exist for longer. So, you know, perhaps we'll see some unfolding or some ice melting in the heart, you know.
Absolutely. I think there will definitely be some sort of because the character, she's got to go somewhere. She can't just be the stone cold biatch, you know, the whole time. So I just feel, you know, if and when she starts to care about the group, perhaps maybe there will be a different side of her.
Cool. Yeah.
And so can you tease anything about where Brayden will be going this season?
Yeah, I have to think about this question. Because it's like, what can I tease without saying stuff? Oh, God. I guess, where is Brayden going? Brayden is basically, you know, she's going to be helping out the group as much as possible. I feel like there's definitely going to be a point where perhaps maybe she's going to forget about the fact that she's been hired to do something, because now it's not about that. And I think people can just expect to see maybe a slight shift in her. That's much about all I can say.
I love that. That's like one of my favorite tropes in fiction, is when a relationship is technically a professional one, but then it becomes super unprofessional. And like, it's like, but this is my job. And like, and it all gets conflicted. Like, oh, this isn't okay if I'm working for you, but it's okay if it's just as a friend. And like, it's like my favorite thing. So, or one of them. So I'm excited for that. That should be good. You can't tell us if you die or not, but assuming that you survive, would you be interested in like returning? Like, do you think there's a place like for her among the main cast to like be part of the team for the season?
Oh my gosh. I absolutely think so. I think especially if, you know, if I'm still human or anything by the end of this season, I feel like that actually could be a really, really cool thing, because you have all of these, you know, like I said, you've got your fox, you've got your coyote, you've got your wolves, and then now you got some normal person over here that just has a freaking gun. Like, I feel like it brings in a whole aspect, you know.
It does, yeah, because I mean the other thing is that they're kids, like the main, most of the pack, they're young. Allison, you know, used a bow, and yes, she was quite lethal with it, but in a way it didn't feel like the same jolt you'd see as like teenagers carrying around a bunch of guns. Brayden is an adult, she's like, you know, a soldier, and it works for her, like, you know, in the same way that, you know, Chris Argent can have a gun. And you know, Scott doesn't have anyone on his team with guns, and I don't know whether he'd be, you know, keen on it or not, but it seems like it might be time.
Yes, I absolutely agree. And, you know, and it's not that their growls and their scratches and things aren't doing a good job. They just, you know, they might need a gun in there or something. So I could be that gun.
Yeah, it would be cool, to have you stay if that opportunity does arise.
And hopefully, you know, I mean, like I said, I don't know, but hopefully, you know, the fans will really, really grab onto the character. You know, it'll continue like that, and hopefully people will want to see more of Brayden. So, I don't know. If I survive, that would be really awesome if everybody still wanted her around, because maybe there's that, you know, potential that she could come back. So, who knows?
One thing I wanted to, I guess, quickly ask as well about the premiere is we haven't seen the follow-up episode to the premiere. We've seen another one further down the line, but not the follow-up. So,
oh my God, it's so good, too. Oh, that, my God, it's so good.
Yeah, that reveal at the end of the season 4 premiere of Derek being shrunken back to his baby self. What was that like? Were you around when everyone sort of found out that was, like, did you guys all do, like, I don't know, like a table ripped or like a script, you know, for season, you know, when season 4 came back? Like, what was that, the reaction to that whole happening?
It's weird. We actually, I mean, unless they did it and I didn't know about it, but that would not have been, we didn't have a table read. We did it for 3A. Everybody was there reading 3A, but it was quite interesting. I noticed for this one, we didn't have a table read. It was just like, here's your script, get out there and do it, you know? But when I saw that, I was like, wait a minute, wait, what? I was like, young Derek, little Derek, what the heck? But I actually thought it was kind of cool because it kind of shows that, you know, what kind of power that Kate has to be able to do something like that, you know? Like, I actually thought it brought in a whole different kind of thing. I actually kind of liked it. It was weird, but I liked it.
It's not something I really ever expected.
Oh, no. Not at all. And I think the audience, well, I mean, I guess this will have already aired, but I think hopefully the audience was shocked by it too, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty wacky. And I mean, I know that they wanted, you know, they were very impressed with Ian Nelson when they did the flashback episode with Derek. But geez, he looks so young, like younger than the team. I don't know how old he's meant to be in the flat, you know, now, like in this, because we don't have the answers about how he is and, you know, how he's become child Tiny Derek. But
right.
It was so trippy. And
I know. It's weird because you're thinking, okay, we're going to see, you know, regular Derek, and then bam, it's just this little thing. It's like, what the heck?
I mean, are we going to find out how that happened? Like, there's some new mythology introduced with the were-jaguars, the Aztecs, the Nahual. Is it their magic? Like, do we find out how it's done? Like, you know, is it a mythology thing or is it a druid thing or is it, a super X-ray sci-fi thing?
Well, I can honestly tell you that question I 100% can't answer. And if I did, I'd probably be like smacked in the face. But I will say you do figure it out. You'll find out. And it's really freaking awesome. And you'll just have to wait. Yeah, that one, honestly, I would get like smacked in the face. I can't. But it actually is kind of cool how the whole thing comes about and the reasons why that happened at all. Just wait until ep two.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that's why they didn't give us ep two in the screeners, because they didn't want everyone to know the reveal, you know, to spoil the reveal of that. Yeah, so we got one a bit further down the line.
That's actually the only one that I've actually really even seen was episode two, because we just did something for Wolf Watch. They made us watch that one, and I was just like, oh my God, it's so good.
Speaking of Wolf Watch, that's sort of a good place to start on this kind of question. I mean, how has it been on set with the cast, like, you know, becoming part of the group more full time? I mean, what was the dynamic like in season three, and what's it like now? You've actually worked with a lot of the different like actors who have come and gone on the show. So who's been really cool, or like, you know, who's been your favorite, you know, or who would you like to potentially work with more, and just how is the vibe of you coming on there sort of more full time?
Honestly, the vibe is so ridiculously amazing, and I'm not just saying that for cliche reasons. It actually really, really is. I've been on sets before where literally they barely even know that you're there. They don't talk to you, they don't say hi to you or anything. But on this set, I honestly feel like I'm a part of a family. Everyone's welcomed me literally just with open arms. Everyone has really embraced my character, and it's really just been awesome. And I was really excited to be able to work with Tyler Posey, because I hadn't had a chance to work with him, and he's the freaking Teen Wolf. It's like, I gotta work with him, you know? And working with him in this first episode, it was so much fun. Like, he's honestly really, really funny. We were laughing half the time. And I would say, like, he definitely – actually, him and Dylan O'Brien, both of them were just ridiculously hilarious to work with. And I had a really great time with both of them. But it's been awesome. It's been awesome.
We are always happy to hear that, even though we already know it's true.
it's so crazy. And I'm telling you, though, there really are sets out there where it's – You don't even, like, people, they don't get along, they don't like each other, the people just have bad attitudes, they're negative, they don't talk to you, they don't even look at you. Like, this has actually all happened to me. Yeah. And on this set, it is not like that at all. It's great. Like, it sucks when I have to go home at night, literally.
Oh.
Yeah, it kind of makes me sad.
Karen's, like, crying in the corner.
Karen, you and me both.
You know, and the flip side of that is, how has the reception been among the fans? And I mean, the Teen Wolf fandom is very passionate, and it's got this hardcore, it's got this hardcore fan base online. And, you know, you've interacted with a lot of people on Twitter and stuff like that, but how has it been for you, just, having everybody react to Brayden returning?
I would say overall it's been really, really nice. Really nice. I've actually really enjoyed it because when I was on this other show called Jane by Design, I was just like this mean bully girl and everybody hated me. And I was getting all these like really, really bad negative tweets and it really sucked. But on Teen Wolf, like I get to, you know, I get to be this badass mofo and I'm on a motorcycle and, you know, I'm saving everybody's favorite characters. And because of that, I've just been getting so many nice tweets and everyone has honestly just been so friendly. And it's so weird because that really could have gone, you know, either of two ways. They could have just said, get the heck out of here. We hate you, or we love you. And yeah. I'll get the heck out of here. We hate you. But the majority of everybody has really embraced Brayden and it's been nice. So.
Well, they better or we'll come and tell them.
Before, yeah. But, yeah. Tell them not to hate me.
No, I don't think that. I think it'll be. I mean, as the show gets bigger, you know, the proportion of crazy people also gets bigger, but that's fine. I mean, would you be interested in sort of being involved in the fandom, like coming to a convention or anything like that?
Oh my gosh, I would absolutely love to. Like every time the guys keep going, I'm just like, man, what is this? Like, why do the guys get to have all the freaking fun? But no, I want to go to one so bad, but I don't know how it all works, but I think you have to be like, they have to invite the character. So, I mean, if I lived in the same city, I mean, I could just show up, but they have to actually invite you. And so no one's really wanted Brayden to come, but I think it's just cause they don't really know her yet, you know?
Yeah,
so
I think that will change in the next flush of conventions look out for 2015, like the post season four conventions, because I'm pretty sure we already know some people who want to try and invite you to.
That'd be freaking awesome.
Yeah, you know, I think that it will be a really, really cool thing. And it's, you know, they're different all over the world depending on who runs them, but generally they're a really fun experience and it should be cool if you want to come. I'm would be excited for you to come. And if you come to one of the ones that we do, that we will be at, as sort of, we do things, we do live podcasts sometimes, or we did the, you know, moderating at the ByteCon in LA a few months ago. Yeah, we can all hang out. It'll be great.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. I'd love that. That'd be great.
Yay. Okay, one thing that apparently a lot of people in the fandom have been wondering is if Brayden has, in the script, been given a last name at all, because I know they sometimes have trouble getting, like, the licensing for names and stuff like that. And, and you don't have to say what it is if she does, but has she been given a full name or?
So far, I don't know what the last name is. I have no idea.
No, it's fair enough. It's not that important to me personally, but apparently a lot of people have been asking that, so we said that we would ask.
And it's funny, I've gotten that question, or they were, for a while, they were asking me how old I was, and it was all things, like, I remember responding back, and I said, you know what, let me go ask Jeff this question. And, I mean, I don't know what my specific age is, but I just know, I'm an adult, so.
people are really hung up on that, like, the whole, I think it's because most people are still really, really, really trying to figure out how old Derek is, because they've had some, like, discrepancy about, like, werewolf aging, about, like, apparently it's not just does what it says on the tin, if you know what I mean, apparently. There's a bit where they're like, oh, you're 17 in years, but it's not the same as in werewolf years or something.
Nice, right.
And we don't know what the deal is with that, but people are always trying to put things into point of reference with how old Derek could potentially be. So, I mean, I think that Brayden looked like an adult, from 20 to 30 adult of that kind of thing.
Which is so weird. Mostly what all I play is teenager, which is so weird. So it was kind of good. I was like, I'm an adult now. Like, it was exciting.
Well, I mean, I think it's all about, you know, the attitude. Like, the cast is quite mixed in ages, and, like, some of the younger people play older and, like, some of the older people play younger. But, I think it's cool and exciting. And we like the dynamic of, like, not all kids, and the team is a bit of a mixed bag. It's It's nice. So I do like the idea of this group of five little teens running off to Mexico to save their big hopeless friends.
I know. It's kind of funny. And it's like, what about summer school? Like, don't you guys have tests to study for? But no, they're going to Mexico.
It's so cute. You've watched the whole seasons, you know, back as in preparation, you know, for being involved in the show. What's been some of your sort of favorite moments or characters as sort of just as a watcher?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not really that much of a girly person, but I do think it was really, really cute in the beginning, just the whole dynamic between Scott and Allison, just how they, you know, eventually just kind of came together. They had this whole little relationship thing going on. I just thought that whole thing was kind of cute. And then, I would probably say somewhere in season three because I was a part of it. Mm-hmm. But I really, really liked just the whole thing with Deucalion and his freaking pack. Like, people don't know, but I actually auditioned for the role of Kali.
Oh, cool.
And I just thought it was kind of cool. He's just like this main dude, and like these are like his troops behind him. And I don't know, I just thought that whole thing was kind of awesome. And it just brought in a whole new little thing into the series. So yeah, probably just those two. Something kind of mushy with Scott and Allison, and then something kind of dark with them. So.
And the pack, I guess, the Alpha Pack has two surviving members, which is Deucalion and Ethan. If you could pick one of those two to show back up again, which one would you want to show up?
Oh, freaking Deucalion, absolutely. And I think it's probably just because I just love the way Gideon portrayed him. He did such an amazing
job. He was so slick. So elegant and just...
I know. It's inspiring to watch him because, I mean, I don't know. I've always just loved acting in general, and all we're doing is just telling a story. And he really, really, really got into that, and he really just, I don't know, I feel like he just put that character on a whole new level, and I would love to see him come back. I mean, and come on, the guy hired me, so, you know.
He's got to be out there somewhere. Like,
yeah, he's out there somewhere. But it is kind of weird, though, because it's almost like, well, what happened to the guy? Mm. You know, so he's back to normal? Like, what's going on? What's
he
doing?
He's just good now? Like, because he got
his decision. Afraid to come back to Beacon Hills and face Derek and Scott.
Yeah, possibly.
It's a little weird. But, I mean, I hope they bring him back in some way, shape, or form, because he was just awesome.
And from your perspective, which villain that we've seen so far, you know, Kate, Gerard, even the ones that are dead, I guess, like the Durak and stuff like that, who would Brayden not really want to be facing off against?
You know what? Probably the Nagitsune. That dude is freaking crazy. I feel like, because, I mean, I thought there was a point where, I don't know, he's just hard to take down. And I feel like if I'm sitting there shooting and he's not really going anywhere, it's like, you know what, I don't know about that. Plus, personally, that whole character freaked me out. So I feel like I would be running the other way. So yeah. Probably season A.
that was pretty full on experience, yeah. I think. That's one of the things that we kind of have been talking about with season four, about that they have taken it down a notch. Which is good. Like that. I'm sure there's going to be lots of horror and drama and bloodshed and death, but it's not, you know, your main dude being like dying and disgustingly villainous and like, you know, your girlfriend dying and all of this stuff. It's like, you can't keep kind of taking things up a notch like that. At some point you have to dial it back and have a recovery period. And that's like something that's really clear from season four so far, and I really like that as well.
Yeah, and it's I feel like season 3B, it definitely had like this very like dark, sinister kind of thing going on, and I feel like I thought it was great, you know, especially with all the horror and everything. But I don't feel like this season is going to be as like rawr, like, you know, like I feel like it's your normal Teen Wolf, but it doesn't have that crazy, like dark kind of, you know, hover over it. So,
yeah, I mean, I think having one of the heroes become the villain is always going to be the darkest point in a show. So, you know, having that happen to Styles is kind of.
Yeah. Oh my God. He did such a good job too.
Yeah, I know. I, Yeah, I've seen that they're trying to, I don't know if it's just fans or if it's someone saw the ballots, but they're submitting him for Emmy nomination.
Oh my God, that would be awesome.
Yeah, I feel like I officially saw the ballots, and but I definitely saw it trending on Twitter that I think that they are submitting him for something, which is
a bit difficult. They should submit him.
I don't know if an MTV show has ever gotten any, you know, proper awards like that, but he definitely deserves it.
Oh my God, he so deserves it. I was actually surprised. I mean, you know, kudos to MTV. They've got some amazing scripted television shows on there, but I just feel like the talent and everything that Dylan brought to that character, that was like, it was just ridiculous. I was like, what is this? MTV? I was like, what?
Yeah, it's next level stuff. Like, there's a lot of people out there that are like, there's a lot of people out there, you know, writing stuff about Dylan saying, you know, it will one day, you know, in 10 or 15 years, people will be saying, like, can you believe that Oscar winner Dylan O'Brien used to be on a show called Teen Wolf? You know what I mean? Like,
oh my God, I so believe it. I was just telling other people that. I was like, we're going to be seeing him getting awards. I just know it.
It's just insane because, and it's not like everyone else isn't next level as well. It's not like, you know, people aren't keeping up with him, but the fact that he had no professional work before that, whereas everyone else had been like doing it since they were kids, pretty much, like, you know, Tyler Posey, Taylor Hoechlin, most of the people are, you know, trained actors, whereas he, it's just like a preternatural kind of, he's one of those people that's really just born with something different and, sorry, we won't turn this into like a Dylan worship.
Since you brought it up,
it's just insane. So I mean, it must be it must be very. It's just such a cool set. I mean, we went there, Karen and I, and the rest of our team. And how long were we there, Karen?
Like 7 hours, wasn't it?
No one made us leave. They were just like, it's fine. You can just be here now. And we're like, okay. We'll just have to stay here until we're told to leave. Right. But it was like the environment of all of the cast and all of the crew, it was not like, it was just, everyone was just weirdly interested in what everyone else was doing and like very nice and personal and, you know, not like, what are those people doing? Get them out of there to us, if you know what I mean. It was just ridiculously good attitude from everyone. And I totally believe that it's not always like that, but it's like some pipe dream, like joke heaven set. And it's just like, I don't really understand how they've managed to get that, but it's kind of amazing.
Yeah, and it could be, too, because they've been around for they've all kind of worked with each other for years. Mm-hmm. So everyone kind of knows what makes each other tick. And you know, they've really become a family now. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that kind of has really, really helped them to just have a nice, cool environment. So it's like when you've got new people like me coming on, it's just like going over to, like, somebody's house and they've lived there for years. It's like, oh, here's the new neighbor. Yeah, you know, here's a bottle of wine. Welcome to the neighborhood. Like, they're settled. They feel really good about what they've got. I think that's what it is.
Yes. Karen, do you want to ask your favorite question?
Uh-oh.
Oh, I was like, what are you talking about? Yes. Okay. This is the final question that we usually ask people when they come on. It's the last question that we asked each other on our first episode of this podcast. And that question is, if you were offered the bite in real life, would you take it?
Huh. oh goodness. No. Wait, am I saying this as Brayden or am I saying this as myself?
You.
Either?
Oh, either, actually. Yeah.
Well, as Brayden, I'm going to say no because, I don't know. I feel she's just so strong and just so, like, powerful in her own way. And, you know, with her background, you know, just also being a mercenary and the motorcycle and the guns, like, no, these people, they need me. So if I become like them, it's like, well, they're losing that dynamic. So I'm going to say no.
Okay, cool. We've had a pretty interesting split in terms of people who would be like, hell yes.
Yeah.
And then
I mean, it's like, of course, it's like, yeah, that would be awesome, but I don't know.
It comes with a lot of responsibility,
yeah,
too.
I mean, Max Carver was like, those twins, they are too much. They are too much. They are a headache and a half, but God, I love them. They are full on, man. But he was like, he was like, would I take the bite? No, I wanted a happy life.
Oh,
he was so fantastic.
That's
but
funny.
But yeah, so we had a really even split of like people who would be like, yeah. I mean, I said no because yeah. I was sort of like just no to the whole idea. And Karen was like, if I knew about the whole world that was going on, I would feel like a responsibility to be able to have some sort of power over it.
Yeah.
So people have really different opinions on it, and it's interesting. So we always like to hear about what people think.
Yeah, and then you got to think, too, you know, you become a werewolf, then you got all this, like, hair growing in on you, and you got these teeth and everything. Like, if you've noticed, it's only really been with the guys for the most part. So
yeah, I think we saw Cora Hale's crinkly werewolf face once. We haven't seen any other girl werewolves have, like, the whole, like, forehead and, like, you know, widow's peak or whatever, like, however it grows in front of people.
I know. That's why I'm like, I can't imagine it being too pretty. And I want to be able to control my anger. And, you know, when the moon comes, I don't want to be turning into some ratchet crazy thing. So, yeah, definitely not. Nah.
Cool. We will put you in the no column in terms of that. One day we'll probably do some infographic with what everyone has said. Yeah.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we're excited to have you in the fandom. And hopefully it's been, you know, it's going to be a great season for everyone.
Yeah, I'm so excited. And honestly, I really love the fandom. Like everyone's been great. Like I said, with you know, there's an exception of like a small little group that's been attacking me.
Yeah.
But other than that, honestly, everyone's been great. Look, and it's been awesome.
Yeah, just don't worry about that. It's just some people are very strange and are not happy with anything they hear about, but that's fine. We'll just leave them alone to be unhappy. They can just be unhappy together. That's fine.
Yes, exactly.
So we would definitely say a big thank you and a big welcome, you know, and a big please come back and please don't die and all of these things that we want to say.
Absolutely. I'm saying the same thing. I told Jeff, I'm like, I don't want to die. You already killed me once. I don't want to die. So hopefully Brayden will be sticking around, but we'll just have to wait and see, all of us. Cause I don't even know. So we'll see.
Yay. So Karen and I will say goodbye to you now. And big thank you once again. Congratulations on Brayden being so awesome and present this season. We're very, very excited. So
yes, I'm so excited too. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we'll see you all next week with the episode 117, episode 2 of Season Wolf, episode 2 of Season Wolf Teen 4, and we will find out what the hell happened to Derek Hale. Sorry about that. Bye-bye. All right. Not a problem. Okay, 69. It's a pity we couldn't get a nice clean number like 70 instead of the dirtiest number, 69, for the new season. Quickly, let's put out a stupid episode that's 69 and then.
I feel like Posey would really like that. We should have had him on.
Oh my god. Okay, well, there's our blooper section for this week.
You shall enjoy it.
Oh, sorry. I've got a bit hyperactive.